He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
I know what the fear is like, for sure. And you can get into a negative mindset where you're like, oh, I'm never going to get there because I have so much other work to do. When am I going to have time to sit down and learn something? So I totally empathize with that. And I remember what that was like. But, you know, you have to face your fear direct on. And, like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted a challenge because, you know, I know Premiere Pro pretty well. Of course, there's things that I'm still learning all the time. But I was like, I need to just sit down and just like challenge myself. And that's why I started doing a lot of After Effects tutorials. And, you know, I'm learning through that process too. I mean, not one person knows everything, right?
I'm super excited to be chatting today with Kelsey Brannon, who you might know as her alter ego, Premiere Gal. Kelsey spent years as a jackette of all trades, or the much cooler sounding shredditor, as she puts it, before starting a wildly successful YouTube channel where she creates awesome tutorials on editing and special effects using Premiere, Photoshop, and After Effects, as well as gear, shooting, audio techniques, and more. In this episode, we'll talk about why today's video editor really needs to get serious about adding even just a little bit of After Effects into their repertoire. We'll probably also get a little nerdy about motion graphics templates and old school film theory. But first, let's check out this quick message from one of our awesome School of Motion alumni.
So taking School of Motion courses has been by far the best decision that I made in my motion design career so far. The courses are streamlined but packed with information, so you save time not searching YouTube, trying to cobble together your own self-education. And the opportunities that I've had since taking the courses have just been more than I could have anticipated. And nearly all my current clients have come through connecting after the courses with other alumni in the Square, which is the School of Motion's alumni network. So if you're on the fence about taking a School of Motion course, then I personally would highly recommend doing it if you have the time and money. So far for me, the courses have more than paid for themselves. My name is Andrew Marston, and I am a School of Motion alumni.
Hey, Kelsey, thank you so much for joining us today. For the unfortunate few who don't already know you a little bit, kind of tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Kyle. Always a pleasure catching up. I know it's virtual, but yeah, if you guys haven't checked out my work, it's Premiere Gal is the YouTube channel that I started when I was working full time as a shredditor. I like to call it shooter, editor, producer. It's kind of like that standard role that a lot of people have to fit into. And I found in that role, I had to, you know, Google and do a lot of stuff to figure out how to do specific effects. I was doing motion graphics, I was doing the editing, I was doing the shooting. So I had to learn how to become a jackette of all trades. And doing that, I found sometimes it was really hard to find resources and I would discover solutions to problems. And, you know, because of the shared economy and I've seen people have successful YouTube tutorials, why not share the knowledge that I have? And, you know, fast forward 5 years later, it's now my full-time thing and I post tutorials on Premiere Pro, After Effects, on the Premiere Gal channel. I know it started as Premiere Gal, but I do give other tips to other Adobe software and some general tips as well. So I try to post weekly videos. I'm really fortunate to work with lots of partners and I have a Patreon community that helps support the channel. And yeah, that's pretty much what I do. It fills up my time. I haven't had much time for freelance projects at the moment. But, you know, my dream going forward is to edit a show for Netflix. So right now I'm trying to like put my energy into that and be like, I want to do something like that that I can talk about on the channel.
Cool. Well, we've put it out there to the universe now.
Yes.
So maybe someone who's listening can make
yes.
that happen. Well, that's awesome. And I knew a while ago that you had been able to lean into your YouTube channel full time. So I'm glad that that's still the case and, you know, still going well there. Your channel is awesome. You know, like you said, you kind of touch Premiere and After Effects and Photoshop and gear and just like general workflow and all kinds of awesome stuff. And it's cool to see, you know, I'm kind of a jack of all trades sort of person too. And it's cool to see other people who can be good at all those things, but also be good at being able to talk about them, which I think is maybe a rarer skill than people give it credit for. I came up with a pun that I wanted to say, and now I've totally not given myself any intro for it, but you are indeed the premier place to get such information, right?
That is correct. I like to say it is an adjective, right? The premier of the premier gal. So thank you for that. You know, I think that it takes time to talk about these things too. Like right now, like my process is highly scripted. When I first started out, I kind of was like writing a guideline and I just kind of like winged it. But I felt like through the one benefit of having a YouTube channel is you get feedback directly from your community. And on one hand, you want it to be natural. You want it to be candid. And on the other hand, you want it to hit these specific talking points. So that way, you know, it's a high production quality and people are able to follow it well. So a lot of times I'm like literally scripting everything out and I'll actually read what I wrote for like the step-by-step direct to the, and then I'll look up at the camera and say, so here we're going to talk about, you know, this and that. And I kind of explain it more on camera and then I go back down to reading from my iPhone because it's just an easier workflow for me. I find that I'm able to describe things and I'm, you know, I think it's, I really like to explain things well, like a scientific method. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of obsessed with, you know, this is how you do it. If somebody skips a step, I'm like, wait, but that was so important. Like, how could you leave that out? Yeah. So you practice with time. And then as we were talking about before, you start to take those ums out and those uhs out. And of course you can edit YouTube videos and get that stuff out. But I think it's important to leave some of that natural things in there to connect with the audience.
I've found that my tutorial process sounds very similar too. I end up scripting things. A lot of it's just like, if you have a specific time frame you're trying to hit, like you want to be sure that you hit all the points without going over, which is really easy to do if you're just kind of meandering through it.
Oh, totally. I mean, you could go on a tangent about how to open up a particular keyboard shortcut and say, oh, by the way, the transparency grid isn't on, so you can click this button. And it's like, do I need to say that? Is it for this particular audience? You know, so it's like, mm-hmm. You know, you have to think about what you can leave in, what you can leave out. But that's all the nitty gritty stuff, you know?
Yeah. Being mindful about your audience, I think, is kind of a lot of what we're going to be talking about today. I wanted to kind of mention something that I've noticed a lot, at least lately, is that you post on Twitter like, hey, does anyone know how to add audio to Mogurts? Or hey, does anyone know how they did this trippy Zoom effect in this show? And then like 4 days later, here's my new tutorial on how to do that thing. it's interesting seeing you like muse about these things. And then clearly sometimes you're like, I'll just figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes, you know, I mean, we're a community, right? As I said in the beginning, like I started off by Googling and trying to figure stuff out. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I recalled with a Mogurt once, I was using this pack from MotionCan. It's a graphics pack that I use in Premiere Pro for a lot of my tutorial, like arrows and transitions. And a few of them, when you drag them in the timeline, it comes with the sound effects file. And I was like, is that some sort of special thing that he does? And it turns out you just actually add the file in the After Effects timeline and it just comes with it. Such a basic thing. And I actually reached out to MotionCan directly after that because I don't think anybody had an answer on Twitter. And yeah, some people, you know, have the tips and then I'm just the messenger. I'm like sharing it out and hopefully people will find it interesting. And I find a lot of the content too, I have to, because it is my full-time job and I do have sponsors for each tutorial, I have to think of ideas that I'm interested in, but then how to connect it with the sponsor. So I think for that one, it was a sound sponsor. I can't remember which one it was, but it just made sense to make something related to sound, right? And the sex education one, I love that show. I think it's fantastic. And if you haven't watched it yet, it's just, I'm so sad that I finished season 3. I like get so attached to these characters. So I think I'm just creating tutorials now because I don't want to let go of it or wait for season 4 to come out. But yeah, actually I gave a shout out to Tony C. He actually did a screen recording of what he thought was the right process. And he shared it with me. I was like, dude, that's so awesome. So I gave him a shout out in the tutorial. And then I just added a few more of my own, I guess, tips that I discovered through the process of making this bus expand back. Like somebody has taken mushrooms. If you guys are listening to this, I'm talking about the scene in Sex Education. It's not really a spoiler. It's just a scene where two students take mushrooms on the back of the bus. And just the effects are pretty hilarious and it really stuck out to me. So I tried to recreate that.
Yeah, and that one in particular, you've done this a lot, but one thing I really enjoy is that you're giving a lot of information, but you're also not afraid to be silly with a lot of these.
Let's get trippy.
Yeah, making yourself like a goofy character for the tutorial or things like that, which is good. So.
Yeah, and that's totally who I am. And like, you know, growing up, I was actually the class clown in high school. Although I've become like more serious, like professional premier gal sometimes, I'm still like at my heart, like this like silly goon that just like wants to do funny voices and hang out with my friends and just like chill, you know? So I'm trying to get that in there because I think at the end of the day, it's you're just talking with your friends, right? At least that's what I hope to achieve. I hope that people feel that.
I feel like you mostly do. Let's maybe talk about editing a bit here. So you said you were a shredditor for a long time. At some point, maybe you never really decided to kind of specialize, but obviously editing is kind of the one of the central unifying things of all the stuff that you do. How did you learn editing? Kind of what did you start out on? And
yeah, well, I think I've always clung to software and like figuring things out. When I was in high school, I was in a public high school in the Bay Area of California, and they had this media academy, and we were able to learn on one of the first Final Cuts. So this is when I graduated high school in 2007. So there was still the Final Cut Pro 5 or 6 we were using. And we were able to film projects for some of our school projects. So, for example, if we read a book in English, because of the Media Academy, we had a technology class and we could do kind of like a visual report and work in groups and create media projects. And when I was inside of the software, you couldn't peel me away. Like all the people were like, oh, yeah, let's go hang out after school. Let's go get a snack. I'm like, I'm going to be in the software. Like, what are you talking about? I would like go into the technology lab and just sit there and like become obsessed with different effects and stuff. So I think then I knew I was like, I think I want to do something in post-production because I love the control. And I'm kind of, while I am a social person, I'm also very introverted. And I love to just like figure things out on my own. Of course, still collaborate with people. It's still important. And then, you know, from there, I like worked with my technology teacher and was like, I think I want to apply to college with like film and media studies. I went to UC Santa Barbara and it was film and media studies. So we did a lot of like historical research on like filmmaking, you know, a lot of deep stuff on like philosophy and like, you know, kind of film theory. And I also was able to focus on production component and I was doing some editing projects and I always wanted to be the editor. And that was kind of my focus and that was what I felt comfortable with. And that's kind of how I fell into editing as sort of my go-to rather than being like, oh, I'm going to be the person behind the camera, right? Mm-hmm.
So you talked about software quite a bit, and obviously we're going to be talking about kind of different softwares and why they're important. But I think those of us that have been doing this a while know that ultimately the software is just a tool, and like you can know Premiere really well. But do you maybe have any particular like epiphany moment where you realized that you'd kind of learned how to edit and not just like use Final Cut or use Premiere or whatever?
I think it's kind of like from the part of just like putting a bunch of clips together versus like actually improving the story. I think there was a moment where I realized, and I think it happened simultaneously as I was learning how to become a better writer in college, where like you take out all the redundancies, you know, and you have to cut off an arm or a leg, or you have to go and change something, or you have to bring in, like for documentary footage, for example, if you need to hit another target audience, you need to bring in other people, subjects in that documentary that target audience will relate to. And it's like, I think at that point, somewhere in college, grad school, maybe too, I was like, okay, I need to figure out how to just trim out this part so it makes more sense to show this perspective in a different way. It wasn't just putting clips in a timeline, cool effect. It was like building that story and trying to get that message across. Because at the end of the day, it is about that story. And while all I'm really doing right now is effects tutorials, you know, I think at the end of the day when I was doing, you know, short films as a shredditor, it was really about finding those key moments, those moments that spoke to the message, because I was also the producer, right? I wasn't just the editor of those films. I had to find, okay, what's the key message that the people that are approving this want in this video? And that's, I think, really editing, is really putting together the story. That's editing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very much writing, honestly, like kind of pre-writing things, although sometimes you don't have control over what the things are that you're getting. So it's sort of an interesting, like, creative problem solving thing. But you were kind of circling around this a little bit when you were just talking about your tutorial process before, because I think editors think that way, even when you're scripting things out, because you're already thinking about how it needs to fit together and be concise and flow properly, which is very much editor mindset.
Exactly. I call it my editing script, actually, because I've started working with a few freelance editors to help me with editing the tutorial. So I'll write my notes in there and I'll put like transition to. So it's almost like, you know, a written script. Just what I'm thinking would make sense for that particular shot. Of course, I want the editors that are working on it to also have fun with their story too. But with tutorials, it's a little bit more like, what is it called? Boilerplate, where you kind of have everything, you know, all the graphics ready with a little bit of room for improvisation.
So we probably have a lot of motion designers listening to this who kind of edit. Probably some of them are editing in After Effects, which, let's just say, please stop doing that. Are there any tips that you could give them to kind of just be in a little bit more of an editing mindset, especially if they maybe came from more of a design background or something like that? And maybe also just like realize that Premiere isn't scary.
Yes. So actually, it's funny that you said that, because I remember I was walking the halls in my old job and there was this director that walked by of this digital program. And he's like, what are you guys using to edit with? And I was like, pretty much Premiere. And he's like, really? Because like everybody on my team is editing fully in After Effects. And I looked at him and I was like, what? Like even the sound and like everything? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, are you sure? And that was kind of the end of the conversation. And I didn't bring it up again. But I think that he's probably seen a lot of like, because they did a lot of like short teasers too. And I think for like 30 seconds or 15 second videos, I think it's completely fine to use After Effects, as long as you make sure to go in and like make sure the audio levels are okay. And it's a little bit more clunky in After Effects to like open up the audio files. Premiere is just like, you can kind of do everything.
That's a generous way to phrase it.
Yeah. I'm always an optimist looking on the bright side of things. If I can get it done, then it's okay, you know? And I think if you're wondering, you know, should I jump into Premiere Pro? It's just a little bit different of a layout, right? It's kind of frustrating to do keyframing in motion graphics. So I think what I like to say is like Premiere is kind of the hub for all of the graphics, whether it's Photoshop files, Illustrator files, audio files, dynamically linked comps that you take. What generally I do is I duplicate the clip in Premiere Pro, so I always have the original, and then I'll dynamically link it if I want to do some rotoscoping. You know, talking to you motion designers, you know, I'm learning After Effects as I go along, and I've kind of always had my toes in it, probably since like 2009, I've been like in After Effects, but not seriously like understanding how rotoscoping and tracking works. And, you know, I know we were talking about how like, it's kind of like you need to know some basics in Premiere if you're a motion designer. And then if you're an editor, you also need to know these basics in After Effects, because you can't really exclude them in today's age, I feel like, with our editing projects, at least for me.
I totally agree. And you just created the segue to the next question. So, I mean, obviously there are specialties where you can certainly exist without ever touching After Effects. But it seems like, in my mind, you know, being a quote editor already means that you are cutting, you're doing some degree of project management, hopefully, so your things aren't a complete mess. You're probably doing color, you're probably doing audio, you know, and even if you have a designer, you have to know at least a little something about adding titles, if nothing else.
Right.
And I think it'd be really hard to know zero After Effects as a quote editor.
I think it's just important to put yourself in that person's shoes. So if you know how After Effects works, you know what that motion designer needs if you're working with them. If you're a motion designer and you know some Premiere basics, you'll know what that editor needs. And I think it's important to have just that basic knowledge. And, you know, I'm working with an editor right now where her specialty was primarily in motion graphics. So this is actually a great example. And she's a fantastic motion designer and she's just learning Premiere Pro as we go. And she was great. The only thing that she's really needed help with is sound and just a little bit with color and some workarounds with keyframing. Because keyframing in Premiere Pro, I actually gave her the plugin Motion Tween by Film Impact. It's a huge time saver. I mean, I use it in every single tutorial. I know it's a plugin and I'm not plugging it because I'm trying to promote it or anything. It's just, I literally use it in every video. You just drag and drop it. Yeah, you know what it is. So like, if you guys don't know how it works, essentially, normally when you keyframe, you're setting your starting keyframe and then you're going to the end with the playhead and then you're, you know, scaling it up, right? But if you ever adjust that clip in Premiere Pro, you may cut over that keyframe and it screws up the whole timeline. So the way that Motion Tween works is you make a cut at where you want that animation kind of to start or in the middle. And then that next clip, you can like scale it up using the effect controls. And then you just drag this transition between and it just smoothly moves between them. Of course, you have to add the composite rendering to it from effect controls. But once you get the hang of it, it's just a time saver. So yeah, just little things like that make it so motion designers can really just become great editors quickly through practice. Mm-hmm.
So you said you've kind of been learning After Effects as you went, which is, you know, I do hear that from a lot of people, you know, and just to sort of make the point, you know, you don't necessarily need to be an expert in something to teach it. You just need to know enough to teach that thing. But I often hear from editors or people just coming into it that After Effects is very intimidating to start in. And sounds like you're not too far away from remembering, you know, when it was intimidating or maybe parts of it still are. Do you sort of still think that or do you kind of remember that vibe or have any thoughts about that?
I think I know what the fear is like for sure. And you can get into a negative mindset where you're like, oh, I'm never going to get there because I have so much other work to do. When am I going to have time to sit down and learn something? So I totally empathize with that. And I remember what that was like. But, you know, you have to face your fear direct on. And like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted a challenge because, you know, I know Premiere Pro pretty well. Of course, there's things that I'm still learning all the time. But I was like, I need to just sit down and just like challenge myself. And that's why I started doing a lot of After Effects tutorials. And, you know, I'm learning through that process too. I mean, not one person knows everything, right? So by doing that, by teaching, you actually learn more. And so now I'm comfortable with like After Effects camera, rotoscoping, tracking with Mocha. Of course, there's still some other stuff that, you know, is super intimidating for me. Like, what is it? Like, you know, head replacements or, and this stuff might not even be for After Effects necessarily. There's other tools that are used for that. But, you know, more advanced Mocha Pro tracking is something that I'd like to get more into. But I can empathize with that fear.
Is there a specific tool in After Effects that you've tried and just couldn't grasp? Or I guess maybe to twist that a little bit, you thought was going to be really scary and then like you mastered it and it felt awesome.
The one that I thought was going to be more difficult was motion tracking screen replacements. And then it wasn't that hard at all. Mm-hmm. It was actually pretty easy. And also using just the built-in Mocha AE to get text, because what happens, there's this weird distortion that happens if it's not the same size as the frame. It's really hard to describe, actually, and I'm still kind of confused at why it doesn't work. But you have to like change the distortion and the character width and play around with all these controls until it gets right. But once you like create those pathways, kind of like riding a bike, you start to get how it works. And then there's something that is still scary for me. So I think when I was first working with some of the Boris FX tools, the Beauty Studio plugin, at first I was like, how does this work? And I actually did a call with the team and they were super helpful in describing how to use the face mask map. So that way, if you want to create a nice digital makeup on your face. If people have blemishes, you can add like subtle digital makeup. And I was like, what? You can do that? And in After Effects, they just showed me how to select the color and also create tracking mask around the eyes. So that way the smoothing doesn't affect the sharpness of the eyes and the mouth and the eyebrows too, I guess. And so I was like, whoa, you can do this. And it's like, at first that was kind of intimidating, right? Having to do like mask around eyebrows. And, you know, I'm just an editor, a shredditor. I'm like, why am I getting into the weeds of this beauty effect? But it was really cool to learn. And I think that's one true joy of the job that I have is I'm learning like these new tools all the time. I know it's not a built-in, you know, effect in After Effects. And I know there are ways to do it without a plugin. And I guess that's kind of intimidating for me. Like, how would I do it without the plugin? I don't even know if it's possible, but, you know, probably it is. And I guess that's something that I would like to do is try to do more things that don't require like a starting point with a plugin, right?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of editors, I think in particular, who are kind of coming to After Effects for some of these compositing things, stuff like that. And, you know, they realize they need to do a little bit of title work and stuff. Did you kind of have a moment where you maybe realized, because I definitely had this moment where I realized I maybe need to learn a little something about design too, because I started realizing that my titles in particular did not look good.
Yeah. Some thumbnails that I think are absolute crap on my channel end up doing so well. And I'm like, what the heck?
Well, that's YouTube. And well, that's a different conversation.
That's YouTube. That's a whole nother thing. But yes, design is super important. You know, I didn't study design, but I've always, you know, been aware of it. And, you know, I know what good design looks like now from having to work in some marketing teams and my experience and, you know, working with great graphic designers. I'm like, oh, yeah, they know what they're doing, you know. And I love it when the designers also know what I need as well. And actually in my shredditor job that I worked, we had a team. It was a digital team. And I was one of the video producers. We had social media producers. And then we had graphic designers. And, you know, we would share color themes with each other through the Adobe Creative Cloud. And I told them that I could use an AE file, for example. Not AE file. I pronounce it because I'm in Poland right now and I pronounce it Illustrator. So in Poland, they say the I letter is pronounced E. So I said AE because I was thinking about the Illustrator file. Anyway, so the Illustrator files I can use in Premiere Pro and just explaining to them how it works. And then I would actually, I know I'm segueing here into something else, but I would create motion graphics templates. This is when it first came out, the idea of a motion graphics template. And I was like, this is great. I was able to create something. So that way the social producers who have no video experience, they were literally just creating the post to share the videos on Facebook and Twitter. I was able to create motion graphics templates so that they can then edit in Premiere themselves. So we're talking people that are not motion designers, but people that come from like a writing background and marketing background to make editing easier for them. So I just love how, you know, everything works together and like everybody on that team kind of had an idea of like what I needed and what the graphic designer needed. And I'm still kind of thinking that way, even though I don't work on a big team anymore. It's still super important to think about design elements and, you know, even reach out to people if you're interested in learning. I know that there's some great channels on design. I think Pix and Perfect is great in Photoshop if you're want to learn more about like Photoshop effects. And then what's her face is design. Charlie, I forget her last name. She's from New Zealand and she's great. She has some great design tips. So yeah, I'm always trying to improve it.
I'm sure we'll look it up and link to her. I know one of the things I found from finally learning some design stuff actually from School of Motion before I worked here is that there were a lot of things I was doing because I kind of knew other people were doing it, but being able to be intentional about those choices instead of spending 3 hours kind of like circling around something that I didn't quite know how to do, that was one of the biggest things for me.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Like it's still a learning process.
Let's nerd out about Mogurt for a second, because I'm also a huge Mogurt hype person, and I wish more people were using them. I can't count the number of times where I have been working on a project with someone and recommended that as a solution. They're like, what? They've never heard of them. And people are resistant to change sometimes. And, you know, they're used to getting like a render out of After Effects, but you know, I could literally give you a template where all you have to do is type a new word and it's fully animated and everything. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah. I think, you know, some Mogarts perform better than others.
For sure.
And I think the software is like definitely improved so much since it first came out. And the Essential Graphics Panel, I think the intent here was like it created this new kind of revolution. I actually made a whole long course on the Essential Graphics Panel, and I go into kind of the history of it. It was just like kind of a nerdy time for me to nerd out about the EGP, as they call it. But I was a big adopter and a big supporter of that move, because not only when you purchase templates or if somebody gives you a template and you need to modify it, this is going back to what we were talking about knowing After Effects, you can open up that Mogart file in After Effects. There's a hack.
It's actually direct now. I was meaning to tell you.
Oh, that's great.
You can just open it up in After Effects now. You don't have to do the unzip thing.
Oh my God. I was just about to say I would like to, yeah. And I think I said that in one of my past videos. I wish that we could just open it up. So that's great. So if you can open up the Mogart file, you can go in and you can, you know, adjust the font or the colors. Because one thing about Mogart files that some people are saying is like, oh, but every time I drop it in from Premiere, I have to change the color each time and I have to change the font each time. That's eating up time. And I get that. That's little tedious work that takes away from your time. So, you know, going into After Effects and feeling comfortable there to just quickly change it and re-export it and add it to your Essential Graphics Panel in Premiere is just, you know, a fantastic workflow. So if you're not using Mogarts, you know, I would say just try, you know. And one thing to remember, too, is that you don't necessarily have to use a Mogart. Is like if you start with a Mogart and like, for example, if you're sharing a motion graphics with somebody else and it's going to be the same every time, you can just render it out as a movie file too. But the beauty of it is if there is a client that needs a quick change, you can just go in and quickly change it without having to re-render it each time, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah, so much better for the right things. So obviously, like, one answer to this question is very obvious because you teach about it a lot. But particularly when you were still doing client work, what do you feel like learning After Effects did for your career or your trajectory?
I think I was able to make the videos better. You know, they're more dynamic, more interesting than just, you know, I was doing some more like talking headshots with like lower thirds and lots of B-rolls. They were like little mini documentary series. And so I was able to add, you know, better transitions. I was able to add some more lower thirds that were more dynamic and interesting. And also, you know, like work with templates more, like if it was like a slideshow effect, not building it from scratch because I didn't have time to do that. And then getting to know how to use After Effects and then sharing that knowledge with my team so we can make better content ultimately. Because, you know, those videos have to be eye-catchy.
Everything kind of does now.
Yeah, story is king. But like if you can, especially if you're on TikTok too, and I know there's lots of mobile apps that do like different effects and stuff, but I know that there's a lot of TikTokers that actually use After Effects to create like magic effects, and then they'll share how I did this, you know? And, you know, you can make a career out of being a TikToker magician these days. So, you know, why not learn After Effects to have some fun? I know I recently posted my witch takeoff effect. And actually, I didn't use After Effects for that because I used an asset from my friends over at Production Create that they designed already with a transparency. So I kind of cheated there. But, you know, if it's there, why not use it? But yeah, definitely learning After Effects has definitely upped my game for sure.
So you called it cheating, but I think that learning, whether you're doing it in After Effects specifically or not, kind of starting to understand like the concept of compositing, it just opens up so many possibilities versus like literally just snipping clips together. And like you said, there's so many people, there's kids making stuff with their phones and even using apps that are doing these compositing tasks in, you know, sometimes rudimentary ways, but
yeah.
It's just this whole new universe of possibilities when you aren't just limited to the footage you have. You can combine things and remix things in all kinds of interesting ways.
Yeah, for sure. Like a lot of the mobile apps, like you probably have to pay like a monthly fee and then you'll be able to use those effects that you can pause it. So it's the same sort of thing that I did, but I just took this like witch takeoff spinning twister smoke effect. And then you still have to think about from an editing perspective, okay, I'm going to not be in the frame and I'll get 15 seconds. Also thinking like a cinematographer at the same time, I get 15 seconds, nobody in frame. And then I'm going to, you know, do the exact same shot. Don't move the tripod and hope there's not a lot of wind in the next shot if it's outside, which is what I was doing. And then, you know, go into frame and then just add that thing on top and make a cut. And it's cool to think about what you can do, you know? I think that's why people love these magic effects, because it's like a extension of our desires, our creativity. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's the joy of what I do, is like sometimes I'm like literally doing just like a basic, did you know how to do this? And like really break down the nitty gritty. But at the end of the day, it's like, wow, you can create this. And that's so cool, you know? Because it really is an extension of what's going on inside. And I think that's totally rad.
Regardless of which tool you're using, it's cool how accessible this stuff has become. You know, I'm just a little bit older than you, but, you know, we were making silly videos in high school and stuff like that. And man, any kind of special effects stuff was really hard when you're working with like VHS tapes.
No, I was using the mini DV tapes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's interesting how we've become evolved. And I know a lot of people are talking about AI now and everything that is being used with AI. And honestly, like AIs have become my best assistant ever. For example, in Premiere Pro, the Essential Sound Panel with the new auto remixing, where it will automatically remix your song to any duration. There's now auto tone in the Lumetri color panel where it will like analyze your shot. It's not always perfect. And to be honest, I haven't really used it because I tend to try to shoot my video as I want it to be, which I think is a good practice to have anyway. At least on YouTube, it's just easier and quicker. But yeah, I think AI is not going to take over the editor's job. I mean, look at me, I'm talking and you're 2021, and somebody is listening to this 100 years from now, they'll be like, ha 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 ha. The AI is like, whoa, ha, 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 stupid human Premiere gal. I really think that we should embrace it to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree. As long as it can help get rid of all the tedious stuff and lets us do the fun, creative things, let's do it. So this is sort of an interesting one. And I know it's been a little while since you maybe had to think about this, but you still kind of do. If someone is an editor who's kind of gotten into motion design, still kind of like trying to figure out how to brand themselves, how to market themselves, do you sort of have any thoughts about the people that aren't quite sure? I mean, honestly, I've been calling myself an editor slash motion designer for over a decade, and I'm fine with it personally. But I know some people feel like they need to really define what it is they do. And it's hard to find something that really covers like, well, I'm an editor and shooter and writer and colorist and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
I think that people assume that all of that is within the word creator these days. But yeah, I definitely have that sort of identity crisis too as a shredditor person. It's like, can you categorize yourself as one particular thing? And people like that. People like putting people in boxes to define, like Zach King is a phenomenal magician, Final Cut King person, and that's what he does. And sometimes there is a beauty in focusing on one thing in life. And I think one thing that I always, you know, think about is like, well, what if I do that? That sounds interesting. I'm always interested in other things. And I guess that's why I created a tutorial channel, because I'm always interested in trying new things out, because otherwise I feel like the routine of doing the same thing all the time gets quite monotonous for me. And it's important to keep life a little spicy every now and then. So yeah, I think for me, in terms of my brand, sometimes I wish maybe I had just used my name instead of Premiere Gal, because I did box myself into like, oh, she's just Premiere. And there is some benefit to having a niche. And if I want to do something more, I could always create another channel like, hey, let's cook with Gal. Because I also, there's other parts of myself, like I like to cook, like I like dogs and other things that I don't really share on that channel. So I think it is important to stick with like a theme if you want to, you know, go kind of in that creator route. And just focus on that and just know that, like, you know, there's a lot of people that it takes them doing a few different channels first before they actually find the thing that they're like, okay, I can do this for a long time. And I think I found that with Gal, but there are times where I'm like, okay, maybe I do want to create again because I am still creating, but maybe I want to be a part of like a TV show or, you know, expand it and evolve a little bit more because we're always evolving, you know, but, you know, try to stick with something, give it time and, you know, be patient with that first project and don't be like, oh, well, I'm only getting like 100 views or not even, and like give up, because the first few videos I did, they didn't get that much coverage, but thanks to Google, some of them did do well in the beginning. I was like, okay, maybe this is a thing, you know? So give yourself time. And I think I'm learning how to do that. It's hard to do that as a human.
It is. It's probably good general advice about anything.
Yeah, just anything. I didn't know we were going to get so deep into sort of...
Yeah, well, here we are.
...philosophy of life and the meaning of life and everything. But I think just try to do what you love. And, you know, not everybody's fortunate to have that ability, but, you know, you have to make your reality. And I truly believe that when you say you want to do something, you know, you can do it and surround yourself with people that love you and support you and who you want to be and, you know, never give up. I mean, to talk about sort of my journey too, I mean, I went into grad school and I didn't talk about this part before, but after film and media studies, I was like, geez, I don't know what to do. Like, am I just going to be like an assistant editor in LA? And I did actually an internship at the Hollywood Reporter and I was a intern and I was just like, it's not that I didn't enjoy the work. I did learn a lot from the guys there, but they were just like quick little snippets, like trying to get people to click to see how this guy did like self-portrait shots. And I just kind of wanted to go a little bit deeper. And I really, really loved film theory. And I was like, maybe I want to be like a film professor or something and like teach film and media studies and build on the literature that's out there. So I actually went to grad school to kind of explore that a little bit. And then I realized that it's kind of more of a academia bubble. It's not bad, and I think it's great, but I wanted to be able to share things. And so I guess that's why I kind of became film professor of software premiere on YouTube in a weird kind of circular way. I found my way to teach in my own way and still feel like I was a part of the community.
I think that's great. It's also, things have changed quite a bit.
True.
And it's easier to make that kind of information so much more accessible than it used to be. And while I wouldn't necessarily recommend someone go to college to learn how to use Premiere, for example, like learning film theory is maybe an appropriate thing to go to college for. But a lot of times, like learning software, and this is someone I have also taught software at a college a little bit, I don't think it's the best place for that. There can be kind of a bubble and probably hard for them to stay updated on things too.
Yeah. I remember a lot of students in film and media studies, they would hate going to the film theory classes because they're like, oh, I'm never going to use this. And
boring.
Like, was it Eisenstein and his like early mm-hmm. Soviet films? Like,
yeah. Which all of our editing today is really based on.
Right.
If you're listening to this and you don't know any editing history, look it up.
Yeah. It's fun. And there's also Bazin. He's French, I think, and it's about the long shot and waiting and being patient and letting everything take place. And if you guys haven't seen the new series Master of None that was made by Aziz Ansari, he directed this next one and he wasn't really in this one, but he uses that theory a lot where he actually, I don't know if he used a film camera or if they added the effect later in post-production, but everything is like a long shot and you just see what happens. Like, the drama unfolds and there's no cut-ins on people's faces. It's kind of an old school approach to it. So I think theory, in a sense, and studying the history of what has been done, I think it's like an homage to those people and kind of like saying, oh, you inspired me to do that. And now I can think about the story in this new way, because a lot of these stories, you know, they come from people's lives and what they're trying to convey emotionally. And what are the different theories? What has been done to kind of convey that in the right way? So I think it was important. So I was actually kind of irritated when these people would be like, oh, like, I don't want to go to that. And I'm like, but it's still cool. Like, what do you mean? I love software, but it's still so cool, you know? So
you're learning why you're making these choices.
The importance of the why. And I think that's really important to echo. But of course, the skills, once you graduate college, this is why I had the problem, right? I was so into film theory, and it's like, maybe I'm not good enough as an editor. And there's always that fear that like you're behind always with technology, like you kind of have to keep up with it all the time. And that is true. You do have to keep up with it if that's the area you want to be in. At the end of the day, I think I fell in love more with making things than writing about them. But luckily, with YouTube, you can write about them and make things at the same time.
So speaking of technology, you know, we've kind of mentioned several times like other tools that you like that are third-party things or AI that you're excited about. Is there something in particular that you're really watching carefully, kind of like really excited to see where it goes, what it could do for, you know, creators of whatever type of media?
The future question. I think, I forget the name of the software. Philip Bloom posted about it a lot recently, where you can have AI make a low res video file higher res. So you can take a 720 or an old videotape camera and improve it to be 8K, for example. So I think that can offer something. And there's also the controversy of I think that this was started in Project Voco that was released, I don't know, in Adobe Max, and then like they kind of stopped pursuing it for some reason. And I guess it's the ethics of recreating voice. Right. So if I'm talking right now, it can recognize my voice and it can recreate words and sentences that I didn't say. And I think there is the ethics issue. And I think people are talking about this already, and with the deepfakes, which I'm not sure, the deepfakes that I see, I'm like, it's not that good. Like, I don't know what people, but I could see how it could get better. So I think the whole media, and there's that ethics to think about too, because media literacy today is whoop. Out the window. I think it was still contained until about like 2018, 2015. I don't know. I just feel like there's no, like people are just sharing stuff and they're not like thinking about it as much anymore. And it is frustrating. I think that's why some people don't like Facebook as much anymore, because this is like constant stuff. So I think that can be layered in with it, you know? And I think that's where we need to watch out for it. But some people are using it to recreate the voice of people that have passed away. And I think that was the controversy of Anthony Bourdain documentary.
Yeah.
Which I understand. It's like, get somebody else's perspective to read it, you know, because it is kind of haunting, you know, to hear something like that. But it depends on how you look at it. It could be joyful to be like, oh, I hear somebody's voice, you know? So those are the three. The one is like making images better quality to look out for. And then like, you know, I think deepfakes and Project Voco are interesting tools that could be used in specific ways. And I think that's it.
AI can definitely be used for good or for evil, hopefully mostly for good. I remember that too. It was a sneak a few years ago, and then they seemed to promptly axe it. But yeah, Adobe had another sneak this year where they were showing what we would colloquially call deepfakes. And I mean, you know, let's be honest, Adobe, they're the ones who created Photoshop, which is sort of the root of all of this changing things, what's real anyway. But they're also making an effort to help, you know, with sort of digital verifications of things, which is something that's definitely needed as we go into this. And hopefully people will be savvy about these things. I mean, I think the reality is it's coming / is here already. So the big players need to be the ones kind of driving the train, because otherwise somebody else is going to be driving it to the wrong place, probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the same technology that's used, for example, with The Irishman to make the actors look like decades younger. So they could tell a more interesting story with the same actor and not have to cast, you know, the younger version, somebody that kind of looks like Robert De Niro, for example, and add makeup and all of that. And it did require a lot of, I think they actually came up with their own system for that. A lot of research and money went into doing that. So you need to have a budget to be able to do something like that. But there are some tools. For example, there's AE Face Tools. It's a template by I forget the name of the author on Envato Market, but you can basically overlay augmented face mask, just kind of like what you see when you do FaceTime, right? But it's more customized to an editor in how you tell your story. You know, just like when I talk about, you know, sex education, in that story, they use technology to help drive the actual narrative of the film. So when people are walking, you see the text message bubbles pop up, you know, and it's like those augmented realities. I could see that taking more of an effect in, you know, a lot of the films that are targeted more for, you know, millennials and mm-hmm. Gen Z and all of that. You know, they're creating stuff now. So we're going to see that.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point to kind of wrap things up, which is knowing your audience and knowing your context and why that's important for whatever you might be creating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm still figuring out my audience. I actually saw that Dan Mace, he's a filmmaker that I follow on YouTube, and he has some really innovative stuff, and he has some really cool effects with stop motion and integrating stop motion with live action. You should definitely check out his work. But he recently did an Instagram story poll, and he's like, hey, I'd love to learn more about who you guys are. Do you prefer to do this or that? And people would just click, you know, like the Instagram poll. And it was like a really smart way of getting to know his audience versus just like a standard like SurveyMonkey from like, you know, I'm not having hate on SurveyMonkey. SurveyMonkey has done a lot of cool stuff. Sorry, SurveyMonkey. But I'm just saying, like, it's, if you want to know your audience on those platforms, that's a super smart way of doing it. And you can do the same thing on YouTube on the community tab. You can say, like, you know, hey, just tell me a little bit about who you are and what you need. And I'm still learning because, you know, I have a huge range of people. It's still mainly male, but it's 80, I need to check, 85 and 15% female. I think that's what it is. And it used to be worse, and it's actually better, which I'm super stoked about. But in terms of age, it's from like 12 to 70 plus. Seriously, you know, it's so cool. Everybody's creating right now. And, you know, my grandma, who's 92, has an iPad, you know. So like she's like, what are you doing? Like, how are you making money? Like, you know, so it's just interesting to know that like anybody can watch the videos that you are making. And I think if you want to get really into it, I think what's his face? He's really into affiliate marketing, and he says you need to create 1,000 true fans, and then you'll be able to go from there. 1,000 true fans is like your starting point, and then you can, you know, grow from there, and then you have success when you have that. And he wrote a book about it, I think. So if you guys are interested, you can check it. Oh, Pat Flynn.
I was going to say, if we figure it out, I'll edit it in. But
so Pat Flynn, he's great, and he's super positive guy. And I really like watching some of his stories on Instagram just to learn his perspective on social media marketing and affiliate marketing. And he's basically saying that you can make a living doing something like that. And I think I talked about this a bit with Haley on Motion Hatch about affiliate marketing. So if you guys are interested in learning more about that and how I make money through that, you can listen to her podcast episode, I think.
That sounds right. I think you were probably my primary education on affiliate marketing. So
really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Which I don't do much of, but I don't personally have enough of a like presence for that sort of thing, really.
Right. I mean, if you're a motion designer, you can, you know, make royalties off of things that you make, for example, in Adobe Stock. And that's kind of similar, but it's different because you actually made the product versus affiliate marketing. You're sharing that. And yeah, it works. And sometimes it doesn't work. But I think it's about brand awareness and creating your platform in a partnership that makes sense, right? So it may not be for you, but, you know, I think that it's worth a try if you want to try it out.
To take this back to our film theory nerdery for just a minute before we finish, do you have any thoughts on knowing your audience and your context in those terms?
Knowing your audience in the context of film theory, like, for example, like kind of like the idea of like you're talking to direct to camera, right? And before, if I was doing a documentary, I would be here. I'd be like, hi, my name is Kelsey, and you know, I'm ignoring that wall, yeah. You know?
The camera is not present.
You know, now we're interacting with that, and we're hyper aware of it. You know, in a lot of films, even, you know, you have those direct to camera kind of mockumentary style work happening. But at least in the YouTube space, it's like it shattered that wall, you know, and I think it gives you a lot of power and relatability. And I think as we were saying before, with like the Voco stuff, it can be great and it can also be too much, you know?
So, I mean, I think my thought is the aesthetics of filmmaking, but editing in particular, have changed so much over the last, I mean, probably 40 years at this point. But, you know, watch a movie from 40 years ago compared to a movie now, or the thing that I always like to start when I would teach people editing, I would show them the opening from Full House, which was a sitcom from the late 80s for you young kids, and then show them the opening for Modern Family, which accomplished the same thing in about 14 seconds as the opening for Full House took 2 minutes to do, with like multiple like lingering shots of each, yeah, you know, each character turning around and smiling and like doing a cheese ball thing. And it's even more compressed now. For John Stamos had a show on at the time. I forget what it was called, but the intro card for the show was literally like 4 seconds of black with the title on it and just like a little doot, 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 doot. It was just interesting how much that's, I'm sure some of it's just driven by advertising requirements and stuff, but like,
right,
the aesthetics of what your audience wants and can understand and can grasp and all that has changed so much. It's interesting.
Yeah. And you have to treat your audience not as dummies either. Like, they're looking more closely now at things and they have their phones and they're looking for like little tidbits in there that you give them. But yeah, like a lot of things are like subtle, quick humor, and you have to be like on it to be able to catch certain things in today's TV. And like, when I try to watch an old 90s like romance film, I really have to change my entire perspective, because it's I'm so used to a different way of consuming films now on Netflix, that it's more fast, like binge watching like episodes, and it's a different pace for sure. But there's also something refreshing about taking a step back, like I was saying, and really changing that. And people, I think at the end of the day, you don't have to like follow the trend of being like fast and quick. You know, I think it's, at the end of the day, it's what you're trying to say in the story in a creative way, you know, and I'm trying to do that in my tutorials when I'm trying to introduce the effect. I'm trying to say, okay, how can I show what I'm going to be talking about in a creative way in this opening? And sometimes I have more time to think about a creative way in doing it versus sometimes I just show the effect. But the key is clarity, consistency, and also trying to make it not super boring, as lively as possible, at least in that YouTube space. But I completely agree with you. It's change. But I urge everybody not to feel like they have to do it a certain way, but to look at the history of how things were done, because it's more fun to see it that way.
So I think that was an excellent way to wrap things up. Where should people go if they want to find out more about you and what you do?
Yeah, well, you could just head on over to youtube.com/PremiereGal to check out tutorials there. There's a little search icon that you can search for any specific effects. And my website, PremiereGal.com. You can see blogs there. I also have a Patreon community associated with the YouTube content, and it's constantly evolving, this community. But essentially, I want to make the project files for that kind of show the entire timeline and some templates that I design, and provide those for free to my patrons, as well as my editing scripts. So you can kind of see how I produce my tutorials. So those are just some of the perks and rewards you can get by joining the Patreon. Of course, some people just come and say, hey, thank you for providing or saving me for doing this edit. And it's there as a way to kind of crowdsource the channel. While I do have sponsors, it's great to, I would love for it to move to be just completely community-based, but it hasn't quite gotten there yet. But I'm super grateful to a lot of the patrons that have signed up, and it's growing. So that's what you can get there. And you can direct message with me there on the app, which is great. And, you know, I have my Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok as well. Search for Premiere Gal TikTok, and Twitter and Instagram, there's an underscore between the Premiere and the Gal because it was taken.
By who?
I don't know. They were just like these dead accounts. Like, this was in 2016, so it was a little late, you know, on Twitter to get a handle that had that. But yeah, you guys can find me there. And, you know, I'm try to be responsive on Instagram if you guys have questions. So you can DM me there, Twitter as well. I'm on every week. So thanks so much, Kyle, for having me. It was a fun conversation.
I'm not sure how many podcasts will reference both John Stamos and Sergei Eisenstein, but if that was on your bingo card, enjoy. As you heard, Kelsey draws from a long list of inspirations for her work and her tutorials. Hopefully we gave you a few new resources, both modern and very old school, that you can be inspired by yourself. And remember, if Kelsey can go from asking on Twitter if a thing is even possible to creating an entertaining and informative tutorial on that thing just a few days later, I'm pretty sure you can work up the confidence to hop into After Effects once in a while. And if you feel like you're ready to get serious about learning After Effects in a structured and project-based format with a bunch of other people just as excited to be learning it as you are and with real feedback on your work from a real person, School of Motion's After Effects Kickstart course is, in my personal opinion, the best way to do it. I'm honestly pretty jealous of people who get to learn After Effects this way, so check it out and make me jealous.